All right, well, welcome back to our Pro Athlete Interview Series, and this is brought to you by the Family Office Club. Now, our investor club has over 7,500 registered investors. We've hosted over 275 events over the last 17 years, and we have about 12 million followers. And after having pro athletes, doctors, private investors, and billionaires up on stage at our events, we decided to go deep and find out what it takes to become the 0.1% performer. And we thought, how better to do that than interviewing a series of pro athletes like Cece here on their mindsets, investments, visualization practices, affirmations, discipline, and really just how they got to where they are now and how they made it to where they were then. So today we're here with Cece, and Cece, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, why don't we start with like a little bit about your background, maybe in the professional sports space, and hear sort of where you were or what you're doing, and then we can sort of bring everyone up to speed on what you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start way back. So played really competitive junior tennis growing up, ended up committing to play at Stanford. And then about a year before I was supposed to go, I ended up turning professional. And the year that I turned pro, the WTA partnered with Indiana University. So I completed my degree online while I was playing full time. And then kind of at the tail end of that undergrad degree, I'd been injured for quite a while, decided it was probably time to move on from professional sports and kind of into the real world. And decided to jump on board at a sports tech focused VC firm. Absolutely loved it. Kind of burnished, you know, my background, my interests, kind of where I wanted to be post tennis. Stayed there for about 4 years, starting in the typical, you know, analyst role, working my way up, and yeah, launched my own fund last summer.
Wow. Congrats. And so what's your fund focused on right now?
Yeah. So it's a 10 million fund. We're focused on sports tech and health tech, very broad on the sports side of things with my background. And then on the health side, we like to call the non-technical side of health. So we'll look into, you know, wellness, fitness, nutrition, longevity. Those are some areas that we typically look at, and mainly Series A companies, some later stage seed. But we love the space. We think it's, you know, a space really ripe for some growth in both the sports and the health areas, and, you know, expertise from my background being an athlete, and I've got a rockstar advisory board as well. So we're excited to be investing in the spaces.
I love that. Well, good to know where you're coming from and sort of where you are now. And I guess, so looking back, and this could be something that when we ask these questions, could be things that you used either as a professional athlete or maybe things that you've sort of refined and focused now in this next like realm of your career. And I guess what kind of visualization or affirmation or goal setting rituals and or even strategies do you use to become like a top 1% performer? Like what do you actually put into practice?
Yeah, it's a great question. Maybe I'll start with my tennis career. So mm-hmm. I worked with a sports psychologist at the National Tennis Center where I trained. All the players worked with him. He was amazing. And, you know, we worked on a lot of different techniques, including visualization, including, you know, deep breathing, other breathing exercises, different on-court routines. And I think a lot of that really did transfer over into my professional career and venture. A lot of times, you know, kind of there's crossover between, you know, different careers. And I think sports and investing is two careers that have a lot of synergies in a lot of different ways. And definitely been able to take a lot of those tactics that I use as a pro athlete and apply them into a slightly different ways, but using the kind of baseline techniques.
Okay. Can you walk us through, like, what would you do when you're visualizing? Is it just visualizing the moves you're going to make or how you're going to react to certain situations? Or like, what would you, if you were to guide us through, you know, you could do any kind of scenario, but just what does that actually mean to you?
Totally. So sometimes we would do visualization when I was playing in terms of, you know, how I'd want to set up a point while playing tennis, how I'd like to, visualize kind of an outcome, things like that. During COVID, we did a lot when there wasn't a lot of tournaments going on, did a lot of visualization of playing matches, playing, you know, big tournaments, things like that. And then in practice, we used it to where I would visualize kind of what I wanted to do in a certain drill or a certain point, and then, you know, complete it right after. So that's what I did on the tennis side. And yeah, again, I think a lot of things can cross over into business.
And so do you use that now, I guess, for like more negotiations and strategies and board meetings of where you want, let's say, the conversation or deal to go? And that's where you're sort of setting up those, you know, those positions or strategies? Or
exactly.
How are you putting in the practice that way?
Yeah, exactly. You pretty much hit the nail on the head. So, you know, right before meeting, kind of visualizing, planning out how I want it to go, how, you know, we'd like to position certain things, I guess, whether it's in a board meeting setting or potentially with Diligence calls with a startup, things like that. So I think there's, yeah, a lot of crossover in terms of, kind of visualizing and preparing to do something beforehand, and then, kind of working through the outcome and using those techniques, during the process.
Okay, and I guess what would be, do you have any recommendation of what happens when things don't go with how you visualize? So you go through all this planning, you're thinking through like, all right, this is what I'm going to say, this is what I'm going to do, it's going to lead us here. What do you do when you need to pivot? Like, is there any strategies that you use when the visualization changes when it meets reality?
Yeah, I think trying to visualize multiple different scenarios helps a lot in like the preparation stage. A lot of times it doesn't go exactly, to plan, but being able to pivot, be quick on your feet is really important. Like I mentioned, use like deep breathing techniques while I was playing tennis. I think that's something that can be used, prior to a meeting or prior to working on a big project, things like that. In terms of business. So I think there's ways that you can be quick on your feet and, kind of take everything in, process it, using some of those techniques and, be able to work through it.
I love it. All right. Well, why don't we look to about for this next one? Okay. What's a $1 million lesson that you learned as a pro athlete that you plan to implement that sort of helps you get into beast mode outside of sports? And this could be either, a $1 million mistake that you see other athletes making, or maybe one that you personally have made if you'd like to share. And then also maybe taking it a step further of like, what's a $1 million mistake that you're seeing some of these companies make that you work with the fund?
That's a great question. So I think number one, maybe when I was an athlete, so I mentioned I went through like a couple of injuries. I don't know how to exactly, quantify the amount of the mistake, but I think, I'd be so eager to get back out on court and play as soon as possible. Sometimes that would set my timeline back a little bit more with the injury. So I think maybe I could consider, that in terms of patience. That definitely crosses over, I think, into business, being patient, being able to, complete a full process, making sure on the tennis side of things that everything was set in terms of my rehab, my fitness, everything involving the injury. A lot of crossover into the business world in terms of, making sure that, no stones are left unturned in terms of diligence, whether it's with a startup, could be on the side of, before a board meeting, preparing for certain things. And then, yeah, I think the second part to your question, maybe $1 million mistake could be, I think there's a couple different ways I can answer this. I think going to market quickly is a great thing for startups, being able to get like first, kind of data and feedback from initial customers, but making sure that you have a product that is built out enough that it'll show, your brand well, and it'll show kind of where you guys, plan to head before doing that. I've seen startups go to market like extremely early with basically just an MVP, not a lot of conviction from the team, with that MVP. They're just thinking, let's just get it out onto the market. I think, building it out a little bit further could help sometimes, to get that initial traction and feedback from initial customers. I could go into like 10 different things, but I think that's a huge one. Making sure your tech is defensible as well is super important. I think that can be a huge mistake that I've seen. And that can be, in terms of competitive mode, in terms of IP, a lot of different ways that you can interpret that. But there's, yeah, a couple different things I've seen that refer to that.
No, it makes sense. I guess too, even if you go out too early, you might actually lose some of your IP defense, depending on
Totally.
if you don't have those things set in place
Yeah,
early.
there's crossover. Totally.
And I guess too, I guess when they're putting it into practice, when they're trying to get it out into the market, because I know one, they're probably excited, or two, they're like, man, we need to show revenue, or we need to show, that people are excited. Like, what is there some kind of threshold that you normally would recommend or look for when you're like, okay, whether it's 100 customers, or you're trying to get a certain amount of subscriptions, or you're trying to get this many units sold that would equal some percentage of a normal production run. Like, what are some of those metrics that maybe you'd recommend? And obviously, it's going to be different, but are there any baselines that you usually would recommend to some of these companies?
Yeah, I don't know if there's any baseline. I think every startup is so different in terms of, their business model, their strategy. So I don't know if there's a like set baseline for anything. And in terms of, building out your MVP and getting ready to go to market, I think, just having something that you can really back and not something that you're just rushing to get to market just to get initial feedback. I think making sure it's built out enough where it can really show, your vision well, even though it doesn't have to be perfect, but building something that you'd be, proud of going to market, I think is important.
Okay. And this next question might be kind of tied to what you said before about not waiting enough time or giving yourself enough time to be prepared to get back into it if, let's say, you have an injury or something. But what's one of the most costliest, like, financial mistakes that you see athletes make? And it could be while they're perhaps an athlete or perhaps when they're preparing for what happens after they leave the professional sports field.
Like you said, can tie definitely into what I mentioned, but I think financial literacy is such an important piece of being an athlete in my mind. Being able to understand, when you are signing these large contracts, when you have a lot of money come in, being smart with how you use that. I think that's so important for athletes. That can be a much larger than a $1 million mistake that, everyone's seen a million times over. And I think athletes focusing on that is incredibly important.
Yeah, and I know part of it is having like a right team around you, maybe have an agent, maybe have a manager, but then at the end of the day, making sure they understand what kind of deals they're getting into. And it might help that some people maybe don't actually go and get their undergrad before going into this professional sports field. And so I guess, do you have any recommendation or any kind of sources that you'd say, all right, these are the things I would hit for, so that way you understand, like, spreadsheets, if you understand balance sheets, income statements, or like, what would you recommend as sort of a baseline of like, all right, get these as like a basic and use that as like a springboard to sort of launch your, I guess, insight and information gathering?
Like you mentioned, I think having a team around you is so important. People that you can really trust, whether it's family members or just, close team members, who can take a lot of that weight off of athletes' shoulders. I think athletes are so focused on their sport when they're involved in it that they don't feel like they have enough time to, I guess, gain any other knowledge in other areas. I think a lot of athletes feel that way. So having that team that can support during the career, and athletes will learn as they, do multiple contracts and, kind of see how the process works. But relying on the team and having multiple different people from, a diversification perspective will be super helpful.
And I guess, do you have any recommendations on even just for, because maybe they're interested just in, let's say, the sports field, and because that's what they know and they're interested in the tech side of all of it. But when you're trying to find like what's the costliest financial mistake, is there perhaps something to be said? Maybe if you're like only focused in this one area, you're not diversified even in like what you're, perhaps it might not be your interest or maybe your background, but maybe you do want to diversify or find out some of those ways to make sure that you're, I guess, protected on a few different areas, just depending on what angle of the market you're participating in.
I think in terms from like an investing perspective, being like having a diversified portfolio is incredibly important. From an athlete's perspective, I think athletes are so single focused sometimes, and I think that's where sometimes athletes run into trouble, I think, where they don't broaden their knowledge out enough in terms of financial literacy. So I think, trying to work that in as much as you can as an athlete is incredibly important. There are a ton of resources that they can go to. And there are some startups that are working with athletes now that are, solely focused on that. So I think there's definitely resources that athletes can use and utilize to gain that knowledge. But yeah, team is super important, diversifying to make sure you have enough people on your team that have, different backgrounds that, you trust is really important.
Okay. No, I love that. Now, how about this? Now, obviously you became in the 0.1% in your field, whether it's on professional sports or right now in the venture capital realm. But how were you able to outcompete everyone around you? Was it because you're more disciplined? Was it because you were just doing more things? You're running circles around them? Or, how do you become a best version of yourself to become that 0.1%er?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when I was playing tennis on tour, I was known to be, one of the hardest workers on tour. I'd put the most hours in onto the court in terms of preparation and training. And I think I, transferred all of that over into my VC career. I started in VC with no like office work experience prior to that, of course, just from being a professional athlete, and had to make up a lot of time, in my perspective, just gaining that extra knowledge, about VC, about the business side of things. So I think, that crossover was incredibly helpful for me, just making sure that, I put 10 times the amount of time in than some of my colleagues in the space. And I think, I had to, because I didn't have that work experience prior. to jumping into VC. And now, you know, I still feel like I'm doing the same, you know, learning every day, but that hard work is definitely a huge piece of it.
Yeah, and I wonder too, because it's interesting that you say that the hard work is still a piece of it. If you've already done, you've been running circles to get to where you are now, but you feel yourself still running circles. Like, I think that's something maybe inherently about you, about competing people, or that doesn't just stop once you find yourself where you wanted to be. You can't, maybe you're trying to now get to that next level, regardless of where that is. It's not something where you're just trying to achieve a plateau. It's like, okay, well, now we're doing the next piece.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's always the next goal, right? So I think there's always work to be done and definitely still, yeah, putting that time in to get to the next one.
Okay, and I guess one last follow-up question then is, what do you do to actually set those goals? So when you're out competing, when you're setting these thresholds, is this something that you do quarterly, yearly, or is there kind of a system you put into place and maybe it was different then than now, but what do you currently do?
Yeah, so I guess from my athletic background, it was definitely, you know, we would do short-term and long-term goals. And I think it's very similar to what I'm doing now. So, you know, I definitely set quarterly goals. I set annual goals, you know, a little bit longer term, like a couple year to 5 year goals. And, you know, focus on that for the meantime. Obviously have bigger picture goals and in the back of my mind, but really focused on those short-term goals that will end up, you know, hopefully leading me to those long-term ones.
I love it. Well, Cece, do you have anything else you'd like to add to the interview here?
I don't know. I think we covered a lot. I loved, you know, chatting about the kind of synergies between pro sports and in the business world. I think that's so important. And yeah, just definitely encouraging athletes to hopefully gain that kind of financial literacy knowledge as much as possible.
I love it. Well, Cece, thank you for being on the show today, and hopefully we'll get to see you at another event coming up soon.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right, talk soon.